You're listening to the Nerd to Know Media Network. Join us at nerdtoknowmedia.com.
Broadcasting from the Blanchistan Center, this is Phoenix FM.
The internet is a communications tool used the world over where people can come together to pitch bad movies.
According to the Nerd Index, you should be upside down in a junior high toilet around the clock.
This is
Tag is in,
tag is out. Never miscommunication.
It's over 9,000.
My name is Foxy.
The balls are in there.
Hello, welcome to this week's edition of the Nerd to Know Basis Show, airing on Phoenix 92.5 FM and all those wonderful places on the internet. I am Kian, and with me this week is Kev. How you doing, Kev?
Hello, how are we doing, everybody?
We all good, I think. Apologies, it has been a few weeks since we've recorded due to act of Easter, but I'm thrilled to be here, and Kev, I believe that we'll jump straight in because, to be honest, I mean, we'll kind of get to it later. There isn't a huge amount of current things at the moment. Lots of trailers, lots of things. There's a Godzilla movie out, a Ghostbusters thing out. But it feels like things have kind of dried up a little bit, or at least we're kind of in between seasons, if you know what I mean.
Well, in typical form, there's been a drought of news the past 2 weeks we haven't recorded, and everything will come out the moment we stop recording. There will be news break after news break after news break, and we'll just have to deal with it all next week. But right now, I think we're just... I think we had some Easter breaks. We played catch-up on, you know, on a backlog of games and shows and anime. So I think we're gonna run down just kind of like a what we've been doing list.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So, like, now, I have finally taken your recommendation and started playing Persona 5. I appreciate I am ridiculously late to that party, but thank you very much for recommending it.
I'm so glad. I think we were talking just before, and you kind of let me know where you were. You've just beaten like the first dungeon in the game.
Yes.
Tell me, because I love this game to absolute pieces. I've played it twice, and considering this is a game that runs up to 150 hours, like a playthrough, it's no small feat.
I'm really enjoying it, but I'm getting slight Telltale vibes. Whenever I play a Telltale-like game, I'm always worrying I'm doing it wrong. And that's the current state of where I'm at. I am enjoying it. The fighting's amazing. The characters are great fun. All that. But I always seem to be falling behind on my to-do list. And we will see if the stress exceeds the fun or not.
I think it's a manageable limit. I think it... Unless you really fail, like, time management systems, which, listen, I'm not saying you can't. It's handy enough to kind of keep on top of things enough once right. You kind of know what to prioritize. You can get the dungeons done on an evening if you make sure to plan it right. There's nearly no reason to need to go back and do that after, you know, every night of a month.
I know, but I'm spread so thin. I'm going to counseling. I'm taking experimental drugs. I work at a shop. I have to study and do crosswords and work at a coffee bar and work at a different shop and fight demons sometimes.
Sometimes you have to play video games with your cat.
Yeah, can't neglect the cat. I have to find time to run around with one of my friends, even though he sworn off running for some reason. And it's a law. I'm not sure. I feel like I'm letting everyone down in this game. And that's before you get to the fact that you're technically in a police interrogation.
Yeah, the whole game is a flashback.
Yes.
Keeping in mind. Oh, actually, one question. I completely forgot to ask you over this. The version that you got, is it Persona 5 The Royal?
I think so, yes.
Okay. Because Atlas, the publisher, have an awful habit of releasing a game and then a year later releasing an expanded version of that game. And it's not even things that could be added as DLC. It's systems rechanged in the game itself.
So and then it's expanded, functionally like, a different game, like...
No.
Okay.
It's like a step above DLC. It's right. It's minor adjustments and then like an expanded like end game.
Okay. Like but you can't add it on. It's too interwoven, no. Like okay.
No, like tell me this. The gun mechanic, right?
Right.
In the version you are playing, do the bullets refill after every battle?
Yes.
Okay, you are playing Royal, because they did not in the original.
So how did you get more of them?
You left. You left the dungeon. You had to ration your bullets out for the whole dungeon. The gun was not very useful.
Okay. Alright, no, I got a nice bundle with 3, 4, and 5, although I haven't done the other ones yet. I to be honest, I only got Persona 5 because I got the Demon Slayer game and was hideously disappointed for what is a AAA game release.
It's not a game. Is this an arena fighter?
No, but I've played the My Hero Academia and I love that one. But like with this game, maybe it'll be different once I complete it. You know? Very encouraging statement. But like I played it for 3 days on holiday and like there are so many cutscenes that the Switch timed out. You know what I mean? Like, you would watch 15, 20 minutes of cutscenes, which, you know, they're fully voiced. It's cool. Like, you know, I'm not going to dislike Demon Slayer. But, like, you would spend so much time watching that you actually start to forget the controls. And there's, random encounter thing. You are just going from the big fight to the big fight to the big fight. So, like, if I had skipped the cutscenes, I suspect I would have been done the whole game in, like, an afternoon. You know,
which is
weird, because the My Hero Academia 2 is one of my favorite games. That game's amazing. Mm. But this one feels like PSP era. It's very, very limited. There's not much game in this game.
Yeah, tell me this. Does it feel like it's just a lesser experience than watching the show?
Yeah, basically. Because, like, no, the fighting is fun. I won't deny that. But, like, if you have to, like, wait ages to get to it, like, and you also don't unlock all the characters automatically, like, in a kind of a Tekken way. So, like, you do have to kind of slog through it. Like, with the Hero Academia, for comparison, there was, like, 50-odd fights in the story game. I think there's, like, 12 in Demon Slayer. Like, it's... Well, I'm not gonna, like... Just for a premium game, I was very, very disappointed. Like, it's...
Yeah.
I'm sure if you just did it as, like, a hacker slasher, it'd still be fine. Obviously, the animation's great and the voice is great and all that. But it just felt very, very unfinished.
That's like, you get like that's it's a real spin of the wheel with like anime licensed tie-in games.
Mm.
9 times out of 10, you get an arena fighter, and 9 times out of another 10 of that, it's even of a decent quality.
I don't mind an arena fighter as long as it's a good arena fighter. But like in a weird way, they went to a huge amount of effort to put the entire show into the cutscenes, which is commendable. But like, all you have to do is put in 100 fights of fighting random zombies to keep me playing the game. This is a game where I set the machine down and had lunch for long stretches of it. Like, Persona's a game where you do a lot of watching, but you're always doing stuff, you know?
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, Persona. I mean, Persona 5 took, like, 8 years to develop. I'd say Demon Slayer was cranked out in the space of a year.
Oh, I'm sure there's, like, huge difference. Yeah. I'm not expecting it to be as good as Persona, but I just meant it in a sense of comparison. Like, when you get a game, you want a game, you know? In a weird way, it would have been better if they made less effort.
That's because, it. Like, you know, it's at, like, at these anime tie-in games are truly, like, they're the best current reflection to cheap licensed PS2 games that we kind of have nowadays. Like, that's, yeah, Japanese developers and marketers are still kind of in that sphere of mid-range budgets, except modern games publishing are marketing them as 60 quid games.
Right. Well, speaking of kind of PS2, PSP era, you finally played Crisis Core. What do you think?
Yeah, no, it almost feels like we're kind of doing a back and forth favor because you finally took a recommendation.
I have been at you with this for years. Yeah.
And I finally took a recommendation of yours. Yes. Since we last recorded, I bought, played, and finished Crisis Core.
What do you think of it?
Final Fantasy VII. Very good. For the record, I played the remake they just released.
I assumed as much. Yeah.
I went back and looked at some stuff about the original. It looks like, for the most part, like, it's a big graphical overhaul, a couple of mechanical changes to kind of streamline everything, and then more bringing everything aesthetically in line to the remake franchise.
Yeah, there aren't a huge amount of control changes from what I remember. Mm. It is just sort of they recast it with the remake cast for consistency.
Which I heard about that after I finished. I was a little surprised.
Yeah,
because the remake cast in, like, the remake games do an incredible job. They are astonishing voice actors.
Yeah,
I don't know if it was the limitations of trying to fit to already animated scenes that they just retextured, but the dialogue in the Crisis Core remake does still feel very stilted,
which is weird because it didn't in the original. I don't know if that's, like you said, maybe they had to crank them out very quickly or something. But, or like, the dialogue was, like, a highlight of the original.
That's it. Like, it feels like... It's a weird one. I do not know enough about game development to know if this was something that was rebuilt from the ground up.
Yeah.
Or if they just managed to retexture, like, skeletal assets.
Yeah.
And up-res them enough.
It could just be circumstantial. Like, now this is just based on hypothetical, but I rewatched Advent Children, the bigger version, for the first time. And it seemed they have a timeline of the entire compilation in the features. And it seems likely that they did all the voice recording at the same time as, like, Advent Children and Dirge Cerberus. And they probably had, like, the benefit of, like, all of that time and, like, the film directors being involved and all that kind of stuff. And that may have helped with some aspects of it. Like, I mean, sure, you got, like, with, I don't know who the new Aerith actor is, but, like, the actor for American Beauty was the Aerith in the, like, original, like, you know, so, like, and you had the original Sephiroth and everything, like, you know, so it could just be that, like, the circumstances weren't there to, like,
it might have been so many things. And again, this is a knock on the actors, because it said
no
the performances they put out in the, like, the full console remakes, astonishing. Aerith's voice actress, it puts out one of the best video game voice actor performances I've heard in a decade.
Yeah,
she is astonishingly good. But anyway, I'm getting caught in the weeds here.
Yeah.
It's a little stilted, and that's, like, a nitpick of anything. Crisis Core is a great game. I really had fun with it. I was talking about this last day. Aside from your nagging at me, the main reason I jumped on it was because I finished up Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, the remake.
Right.
And that is a game that felt like it really needed me to do my homework and know all of Final Fantasy VII.
Right.
The whole compilation. Especially, like, it relies on you knowing a lot of stuff about Zack.
That's just
So.
it, yeah. And you know what? I point to Crisis Core frequently as if you're going to do a prequel, sorry, waving at my son. If you're going to do a prequel, I think Crisis Core is the right way to do it. And I say that because it is 75% its own original story. There are elements that are true to the world. Your Sephiroth is there, your Hojo's there. It does flow naturally into Final Fantasy VII and the soldier thing that was coming out at the same time.
Yeah.
But, like, when the famous bit comes up, the Nibelheim stuff, it almost feels like it's interrupting the flow of action. It's not like you're not just waiting for
You
the
know
big
what?
thing. Do you know what I
I
mean?
had, well, no, actually, I felt differently.
Okay.
Because to me, anytime Genesis showed up, it felt like it was interrupting the flow of things.
See, this is what
Genesis
I
is.
mean, though. I like, you know, the original Genesis was gacked.
I think like I was looking at scene side by sides. Gack, I don't know if they got him back for voice acting
Yeah.
either, because I'm on top of that, I played it in English. I don't know.
Yeah.
But like it looks like, you know, it's still the model of Gack. It's still
Yeah.
recognizably the pop star Gack.
Well, I mean, again, not to try to dwell on voice actor stuff, but in the original, like, there was a slightly deranged quality to Genesis. I, again, not the actor's fault, but I was getting more of like an art student sitting in the middle of Temple Bar vibe to the recast Genesis.
Oh yeah, reading his Bernard Shaw play. But that's it. So like, so that when Nibelheim came up, because that's something, you know, that we know, that we know Zack Cloud's story through that. So that when Zack and Cloud are escaping and going across, it really felt like, oh yeah, we gotta wrap up that whole Genesis thing that's going on before we get to the big final moment, huh? Like that's, yeah, but again, oh, that aside, I like what it filled out. Obviously, like what it does to Zack as a character, incredible. That man is so perfectly lovable. Like it's so easy for like somebody that sincerely heroic to get grating. It never does with Zack. He's
And he's a
perfect.
great contrast with Cloud, who I haven't played the remake, but I apologize if I'm repeating myself. I got the impression that Advent Children came out and everyone reevaluated Cloud as like Squall, like a broody loner, where completely forgetting that no, he's not like a ray of sunshine all the time in Seven, but he is kind of the butt of a joke.
Oh yeah,
Like,
that's it. Nobody,
he can wear
everybody
a
in seven.
dress, like, you know.
Yeah, no, everybody in seven knows this man is a loser.
Yeah, like he's a tw like weirdly enough, I'm going through the abridged. That feels like a more true representation of Cloud, and that's a parody.
Which, for the record, the remakes get that hit that nail on the head
Right,
perfectly.
okay.
They get that right back in line in the same way. No, like that's. Because there was Advent Children, which after finishing Crisis Core, I also went back and rewatched Advent Children as well. I think Advent Children and Kingdom Hearts came out around the same time, and I think there was a Flanderization of a couple of the Final Fantasy characters that went on, like
Which, you
the
know, for something
edging,
like Kingdom
the
Hearts, you have to efficiency, you
yeah,
know, whatever.
like there's so but there was the edging of Cloud and the purification of Aerith. Were the two big ones.
That's right. Yeah,
Everyone then kind of saw
Aerith isn't like, you know, like, I mean,
Aerith isn't
she
a
literally lives in a
pure
church,
angel.
sure, but she isn't like entirely like pure, like, you know, wholesome. Like, again, the Advent Children thing. Yes, it makes sense for her to talk that way when she's literally in heaven, but that's not who she is all the time. Like,
But again, thankfully, modern interpretations and the remakes have put things back in a line as they were in the original, in that she's also kind of a little freak.
yes. Oh yeah, sure. Cloud sneaks out and she catches him.
That's she's a 20-something living in an underground slums. She just has a good attitude about
Exactly. Just because she's
it.
positive doesn't mean she's like naive, like.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, no, Kreider scored with a blast. And do you know what? One thing that always kind of intimidated me beforehand was the roulette mechanic, the DMW.
I was about to say, that's actually my favorite mechanic in any game. I love it.
I am torn on it because it does, like, I thought it was interesting. I thought it was fun. And I liked how the story kind of fed into it as it built. Like, it was a way of building character relationships as you got more people to put into it. And then, you know, it visualizes even positive and negative relationships of just Zach building out this outer circle.
Yeah.
And then as the game goes on, that circle then falls apart because of, you know, everything. And that, again, that ending sequence where the DMW stops working is great.
Brutal, yeah.
It is also a completely random element that you have almost no control over.
It is, but I like, I think without it, you are just hitting things with a sword. And I feel like I liked how it mixes things up and you get memories you don't get to see in the progress of the game. Like, to go back to the Demon Slayer, you had, like, your reward for sitting through 15 minutes of cutscenes and then getting a fight is more cutscenes.
Yeah.
Which you have to leave the story to go watch. To me, it was, like, a really nice way of, like, integrating lots of extra content into the flow of action. And, like, I liked how, like, every character had specific effects. Genesis made him angry. Sisine made him lucky. Like, kind of all that. It felt... it for a single play, like a single character game, it felt like a character, an element that really got into Zack's psychology. Like, to go back to, like, could you imagine Cloud feeling peppy when thinking about Barrett? No. But no. Zack? Sure. Some acquaintance you just met might give him the oomph to win a fight. Absolutely. He's a puppy.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I think it also, again, it worked to its benefit that, like, if you just play this game straight through for the story, it's not long. I think I was 25 hours at it. So, like, I think, you know, it lends itself, like, if you were to deal with that across the course of, like, 100 hours, it might get a bit more grating.
I don't know. I did all the missions, all 300 of them. It didn't bother
you did
me.
Did all of them? God
well,
damn.
I couldn't beat the last boss. I will confess that. But, like, if you're willing to do them, you get, like, a decent, like, 10 hours with Yuffie, you know? Like, you get all this extra content with all the different characters. If you're willing to slog through those, there's loads of...
Yeah.
Like, get involved with the space program.
That's, like, I did about
loads of hidden 30. Stuff. If you're willing to look for it, like...
Yeah, I did about 30%.
Right, okay.
Just kind of naturally, which I think as well, just this was just kind of the mood I was in. At times, this was the perfect podcast game. Just,
right.
Like, those missions, they just kind of keep unlocking the more you do them.
Yeah.
And it is, they, like, admit they last 5 minutes a piece. You just churn through them. And I had put on an audiobook and just kind of whiled away 4 hours on it afterward. Which also, get a library card. You can listen to audiobooks on an app. It's really good.
All right. Listen, I believe that now that we've done talking about completely not up-to-date stuff, I believe you have two anime you want to talk about and some beef with Disney Plus. So what would you like to lead with?
So, okay, listen, here's the thing about Disney, right? Kian, did you know that Disney Plus has anime?
No.
Not only does it have anime, it has exclusive streaming rights to some anime.
Pardon me while I get my phone out, okay.
Yeah, right. There's a handful of original series, apparently quite good. I've yet to watch them. I think its big leading charge for a little while there was the reboot of the final Bleach arc.
Okay.
But the one that really bugged me, right, was I spotted there recently. As a pretext, I don't think we mentioned it a couple of weeks ago, but Dragon Ball's author, Akira Toriyama, passed away recently.
Yeah.
Tragic. Awful. The man was an icon and truly redefined several genres on his own. Right. We could spend an episode talking about him.
But I'm just literally shredded by Dragon Ball Z Lego. I'm completely, yeah.
Yeah, no, like the face of modern anime would not be the same without him. Mm. Anyway. What you might not know is one of his other series, a series called Sandland, manga, recently got an anime adaptation.
Okay.
Disney has the exclusive streaming rights to the Sandland anime. The Sandland anime just launched on Disney Plus.
Right.
Akira Toriyama's name is everywhere. You'd think Disney would have, like, the modicum of advertising knowledge to just put this show out anywhere. Like, I'm not expecting, you know, the big splash posters they have up for Shogun and the Bear that they keep in, like, Romley. Yeah. But I get enough, like, side widget web ads for what Crunchyroll streaming every 2 months. Like, again, this should be easy bait for me for Disney, right? Disney knows what I'm watching. They know how to advertise to me. They never advertise the fact that they have anime. Like, it should not cost them much to be like, hey, we got the new Akira Toriyama anime.
No, because, like, Family Guy is on the top board thing, which I know people like Family Guy, but, like, and, like, NCIS and stuff. But these aren't things that people need to be told about, you know?
It's the fact that, like, they're going to the effort of somebody somewhere in, like, the Disney Plus, like, licensing office is going to the effort to bid out and buy the exclusive rights to stream this.
Right.
But they are doing... It's almost like they're buying it to hide it.
Yeah.
Like, these things just get buried on Disney Plus. And I just...
Needlessly so.
Yeah, like, it baffles me that it is this way. And, like, it's not like, you know... Disney is exclusively like, well, it's just a Western streamer, you know, hoarding this stuff. Netflix and Amazon proudly advertise and display all the anime they have. What I might get to talk about, like one of Netflix's biggest series at the moment, at least from what like my Twitter and displays are going, is a show called Enlisted in Dungeon, which is the new Studio Trigger anime.
Okay.
Like it doesn't take a lot to like. I don't need big billboard ad saying Disney has anime, but put it on your service.
Yeah, just
somewhere
basic awareness, like
I'm at a loss, truly. Like it's the business side of my brain is like, how you're leaving money on the table here. You're spending money to lose money.
How recently did this go up?
Within the past week.
Well, that's what makes me think, because Disney Plus are rolling out a big ad campaign over the last 2 weeks where they're stressing that this isn't strictly a kids streaming service. And I'm not sure if you've been watching the ads, because I'm not sure if you have terrestrial TV, but they're doing a big thing. They have Poor Things on there, The Bear's on there, like Shogun's on there. They seem to be like really, really, really pushing the idea that like Disney Plus is something I'm assuming childless adults can watch. And
but
I'm wondering,
this...
and I'm wondering, now obviously I'm assuming this is an adulty thing too, but I'm wondering if that got lost in the shuffle of that push, you know?
They've had this sort of thing since nearly they launched again. About this time last year, Bleach was a huge name in the anime community. Disney got the streaming exclusive rights for the final arc that never got animated in the original run of Bleach.
Right.
And they didn't advertise. People know it because people were looking for, hey, where can I watch the new Bleach anime?
So Disney didn't advertise it, basically.
No. And again, like you're talking about that marketing push of like, well, Disney isn't just the animated Disney movies, you'd feel like that's the perfect opportunity to be like, to advertise, hey, Disney is more than just that. We also have this whole subsect of, like, of fandom.
Well, you'd think with Toriyama, you'd think that'd be even for a few days. That'd be like, oh, let's throw together a quick documentary using, like, existing interviews and footage. Half an hour, stick it on the Disney Plus header. By the way, here's a new thing. You know, because again, they have, like, mountains of those for Marvel. They have an entire documentary on the soundtrack of Black Panther 2. You can put those things together real easy, you know?
Yeah, and, like, it shouldn't take a lot to even have small targeted ads for, hey, are you searching Crunchyroll? Yeah. Did you also know Disney has that? Like, it feels like it wouldn't take a lot for this to, like, be more well-known. And also just, you know, basic, like, user experience app stuff of, oh, you searched for anime, by the way, like, here's what, basic, like, user recommendations on stream. You know, that's that sort of app stuff.
Well, see, this is why I wonder, like, if this is, like, hedge betting in a way. Because, like, I know it's a completely different medium. But, like, I've talked to authors in the past. And, like, what happens to them is they'll do a book. And a whole bunch of, like, publishers and, like, TV people and movie people will all bid on the rights to make a TV or movie adaptation of their book. And sometimes they'll just sit on the rights for 10 to 15 years, and you can't do anything with it. They don't want to do anything with it, but no one else can make anything. And I wonder with these big IPs, if the likes of Disney, sometimes they say, oh, this thing, we're going to hoover this up so that Netflix doesn't have it. We might not do anything with it, but Netflix doesn't have it. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes they buy things not because they think it's the next big thing, but just because it's like a move in the streaming wars and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And you're almost certainly right. But it feels like a missed opportunity. Like, it feels
absolutely.
Like, it feels like it won't take much effort to push that a bit more.
Yeah. I mean, like, cause, like, just to kind of basically validate that point, like, you know, Netflix got rid of all the Marvel stuff once Disney Plus started putting out Marvel stuff. Now, obviously, there's rights stuff in there, but legally, they could have kept those up there. But, like, they don't want to, like, essentially feed someone else's IP. It's all, like, about traffic and branding and all that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I see what you're coming from. It just confounded me as well.
Yeah.
So that's probably what I'm going to watch over the weekend. But in the meantime, I finished two absolutely stellar fantasy anime lately.
Oh yeah, go on.
Which I mentioned earlier. The one I'll start with is Netflix's new one, Delicious in Dungeon, right?
Okay, which is an amazing name, by the way.
So the thing, so it's a fantasy anime, right? Sword right. Sorcery, adventuring parties go down into a dungeon and fight, you know, their way through. Very, very video gamey. It's also a cooking show.
Ha.
So the whole thing is that this party of lovable misfits have to try and get as far into the dungeon as possible. But food is expensive and it can go to waste pretty quickly, and they're looking for a long journey. So our main character decides the best thing to do is to eat the monsters that they fight in the dungeon. And every episode and every chapter of the manga has a big splash page of, well, here's a risotto I made with walking mushrooms. here is a stew I made out of dragon breast.
You know how, like, in America, when you're, like, pitching a TV show, it's got to be, like, you know, Stranger Things is, like, it's It meets the Goonies, or, like, this new show, it's Star Wars meets The Office. Like, it sounds like Japan has made an art form of that. It's Dungeons it's and wonderful. Dragons meets the Great British Bake Off.
You have no idea how spot on you are. Really, no idea. So that's new on Netflix. And what's great about it, and I think the reason like it's drawing a lot of attention, is it's one of the few like Netflix anime that has been releasing week to week on Netflix.
Okay.
And honestly, like it's fantastic. Like, I want to throw my mind back to a year ago. I think I went off about this. Netflix got the right for JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Part 6.
Right.
There a couple of years ago. That show got dropped in three batches at random points across the year.
Okay.
Where you'd wake up one day, there'd be 12 episodes, and then you'd wait 6 months, and then there'd be 12 more.
That's weird.
And the show, I can't stress enough how big the cultural conversation around JoJo's was when it was streaming week to week on Crunchyroll. Like, while JoJo's was streaming at any anime forum, the top post was, what the hell was happening on JoJo's last night?
Right.
Netflix's release of Stone Ocean truly killed the momentum of discussion. Because the show dropped, you watched it in an afternoon, there was a little bit of buzz when it dropped, and then nobody was talking about JoJo's for a year.
That's what happens with the big group drop thing. Like, for like a Stranger Things or something, that might work, if it's like a long movie or something. But like, I mean, look at how many good like BoJack Horseman episodes completely went unexamined because you just watched it and the whole afternoon was a mood, you know? Like, yeah.
So I think it's really unique, and I think it's really like interesting watching the comparison with Netflix actually putting something that's popular out week on week, and people are still talking about it. Like, there's a lot of buzz around Delicious in Dungeon. Also helped, of course, by the fact that it's a Studio Trigger anime. And
what are the other big things Studio Trigger has done?
They did Gurren Lagann, they did Kill la Kill, Cyberpunk Edgerunners, they did Little Witch Academia. You can not like everything Trigger put out, that's fair, but they have consistently put out something interesting.
Right.
And again, their last one with Netflix was Cyberpunk Edgerunners, which you do not need to have played Cyberpunk 2077 to watch. That's just an exceptional sci-fi anime.
Yeah, you're like the third person to recommend that to me. I'm gonna have to watch that now.
Oh, it's very good. It's very, very good. It's up there with Arcane for being a show where it's based on a video game. The show is just great on its own.
Right.
Delicious Nudge. It's the animation's really fun and bouncy. It's all of the characters are so colorful and distinctive in their own way. I finished up that they had like a mid season break between like the first run of 13 episodes, and now they're on the second run now. I could not wait the month break and have now read all of the manga. And the anime does a great job of like translating it, but the manga author has a fantastic way of just of drawing facial reactions that can be so comically jaded. it's a wonderful show.
Is there like a subset of anime that is just about food? Because I remember there was Food Wars a few years ago.
Oh yeah, food anime is a big deal. Animators have made a lot of money off of making food look really good.
Yeah, because I saw even Geek Ireland has an article, why does food look good in Ghibli movies? Like, you know.
Yeah, no, it's an art form in and of itself.
Mm.
And like sometimes I just want to watch delicious things get prepared. In the same way sports anime are really big. Instead of watching somebody fight each other, what if I watch an underdog rise through the ranks of like volleyball? It scratches a very particular itch.
Sorry, you cast my mind back to one of those viral anime clips of like a tennis anime where someone hit the tennis ball so hard that it somehow caused the meteor that destroyed the dinosaurs. I'm
That
gonna have to
sounds
find
about
out what the
right.
name of that is.
Man, anime's great. So listen, if you're looking for, so I would say if you're looking for like a light-hearted, fun, rompy time with great magic,
Yeah.
Flesh and Dungeon. On the other side, the other show I watched recently, the other great fantasy show I watched was a show called Frieren: Beyond Journey's End.
Okay. I have
This
no
was
idea
on
what that's
Crunchyroll.
about from the title.
So Frieren, again, swords and sorcery fantasy. The basic premise is you've got your four-person adventuring party who go, and the show starts. They've just beat the Demon King. They've just saved
Right.
the world. They're the heroes of the age. The party consists of two human men, a dwarf, and an elf.
Right.
This show
Your
takes
standard
the
kind of
base.
fantasy stuff.
Yeah. This show takes the kind of the basic idea of elves living thousands of years longer than humans.
Right.
And the show then goes on within the first 5 minutes to cut 50 years in the future with the elf going to the funeral of the head of the party.
Right. So this is like a framing device, is it?
Yeah. So
Okay.
The story now is about her after she saved the world.
Okay.
And it kind of follows her almost retracing her steps through that adventure. Because as you learned, a lot of the story is about her realizing what it is to live in the moment when you live an eternal life.
Okay, all right.
Because only after the passing of Himmel the hero did she kind of realize that she took for granted all the time she spent in the 10-year adventure, which to her was a drop in the bucket of her life.
Right.
But to these people was, a decade, like 10 years of their life. And it's this really, it's it like it doesn't rely on like fancy power systems or intricate magic systems. It's just a really, really well-placed, well-plotted character fantasy show about this woman, Frieren, just kind of learning to enjoy what it is about life
So is
that
she kind of the
people didn't
point of
quite
view
know.
character then?
She
Like
is,
obviously in
yeah.
framing device, but I mean like in the body of the show,
Oh,
like.
the show is about her. Yeah,
Okay.
100%. So she kind of goes then and goes and retraces the steps of that original adventure, and
Okay.
then parts of the show, and then the show cuts back to the original adventure periodically, where like she was living at like very removed, like emotionally removed from all this, be like, this is just another day. I could spend a decade here and it'd mean nothing.
Right. So it's about her
Whereas
kind of
now
learning
she.
the value of life and sort of
Yeah.
like, by being around people who like kind of like don't have as much time as her, like, and can't take it for granted.
Precisely,
Yeah.
precisely. And like that's yeah, she'll revisit places she hasn't visited it in several decades, where the people she once knew are gone, and the people she's visiting now are the grandchildren of the people she'd once met, who have been
Okay.
passed down lineage stories about Frieren the Mage.
Okay. See, something I like about this is like you've got that to pull from a different fantasy. You've got that bit in the Two Towers where Elrond warns Arwen off that like, if she stays, she'll be among a bunch of humans who all die in the blink of an eye.
Yeah.
And like this is that as the show, essentially, like.
Yeah. It's that's it. Like, it's a really unique sort of setup and conceit. And the show just does, and like it's so perfectly paced. It's not like a high octane show. It's slow, it's methodical, it's character based. and it's so beautifully woven together. Like, and all of that's benefited with, like, you know, stellar background designs, stellar soundtrack. And then of course she picks up basically a new adventuring party across all of this that just have a nice balance between all of them. Yeah, really stellar fantasy.
You're talking me into this. Which streaming service?
This one's Crunchyroll.
Okay.
This one is Crunchyroll. Like this one takes the thing where when I'm recommending a lot of anime, it always comes with the kind of asterisk of it's anime. This is one I would recommend to, like, if you like fantasy full stop.
Okay.
This is a great show.
Right.
I mean, it helps again to kind of talk studios. This is a Studio Madhouse production.
Okay.
Which it like the that's a body of work that stands on its own. Madhouse in the past produced the first season of One Punch Man and all of Death Note.
You just hit on two of my favorite things. That's
yeah, Madhouse are like that.
Okay, all right. I'm hyped for this. That's excellent. Thank you. Can we talk streaming and trailers for a second?
Yeah, 100%. What have you got?
Okay, because as you probably heard him squawking in the background there a few minutes ago, I'm a parent. I tend to miss a lot of the big cultural things. And kind of getting ready for tonight, I kind of thought, oh, there must be something current that I'm missing out on. Like, I missed X-Men 97, but, like, I didn't grow up with that cartoon, so... but
which I will cut in. I didn't watch that cartoon when I was young either. The current one whips.
Whips it's good.
Real hard. It's
well, then by all means, tell good. Me more.
I've only watched the first two episodes.
Okay.
But like it, where the other one was very much like a Saturday morning cartoon put on a limited budget. This is what if X-Men 97 was given a professional animation budget, and also Cyclops was really really sick.
Okay, I feel like Cyclops is always hard done by. So if it's good for Cyclops, I'll watch it.
Yeah, no, I haven't dug too much into it, so I won't say much. So I don't have much more to say. But it is far better than I thought it was going to be. I had low expectations.
Okay, all right, I'll watch it. But like, I thought I was missing out a lot, and there's not a lot going on the streaming services. And what I noticed is, to circle back to kind of the think you know Disney Plus, well, this isn't your kids' Disney Plus. This is like grown-up adult drama Disney Plus kind of stuff. There's a lot of like original things being pushed, like the Gentleman in Moscow is being advertised on buses. Like, you know, you've got the Renegade Nell with the actor from Derry Girls, whose name I don't have to hand. I'm sorry, but she's great. There seems to be, while Marvel's taken a rest, with the exception of the X-Men thing, there seems to be, like, a big push for, like, original things. And before I kind of get into trailers and stuff, I was kind of wondering, do you think that there is a scramble now on the likes of Prime and Disney Plus and Paramount and all that to try and find the next new thing, or do you think they're actually moving away from established IPs? Like, do you think there's like a bit of a sea change happening?
Oh, I think, I mean, I like we've talked at length about this. Like Marvel's kind of had its day in the sun and is not nearly making the boatloads of money it was. It's still making smaller boatloads of money, but it's not the cash cow anymore. So I think there is, I think there is a scramble. And I think, they're a lot of these IP holders are trying to kind of take different angles at trying to get the next big cash cow, or harping on like the coat strings of some kind of well established formulas, if not franchises. Like,
yes,
I've one of the big shows out now. I've actually been watching a Shogun. That's
another one.
And like it's not being advertised as it, but it's very much, hey, if you like Game of Thrones, this is it. And I will say,
really, because like I have not sought out Shogun, but I've had ads for it everywhere.
Oh yeah, no, it's been advertised, but like yeah. it, it it's that sort of high concept character drama, high tension drama.
Yeah.
Very much in the spirit. It's very, very good. Now, it's a show that benefits from the weekly format again.
Right.
Where they're like thick hour-long episodes that get into politicking and character dynamics. So it's nice to have that sort of like sit with you. Mm. I think it's like, it's for like the modern TV series, I think it's 10 episodes, which is long enough when they're hour-long episodes.
Yeah.
Like it feels meaty. It feels like an event picture.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, it's also the time of year it is. We just had Easter. We just had a holiday break. I think a lot of people are looking for things to watch like that.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of streaming service trying to get stuff out for that break. And then, you know, that'll lead into the summer.
Yeah. Okay. Well, like I actually do want to talk about a new show that's going out on Channel 4, but I just want to cover, like, not even specifically review the trailers, but just mention the fact that Doctor Who's coming back next month. A lot of trailers out for it now. It looks very out there, very different. We've got a historical with the Beatles in episode 2. Like, we've got like drag queens and crazy stuff and magic flying babies and all that. I'm here for weird. So that all looks really good. 2 Star Wars shows coming out, and 2 weird ones at that. There's one called The Acolyte, which has, as far as I know, no recognizable characters, and is set before The Phantom Menace, as well as Tales of the Empire, which is an animated anthology show, kind of like they did Tales of the Jedi last year, that similar thing. So, like, Star Wars, in addition to kind of taking a step back, is going very niche, which I admire in one way, but I find befuddling if it's supposed to be the headline thing at Disney. Like, have you even heard of either of these?
I've heard the name kicking around for The Acolyte, mostly because I think the creator came out and said they've never actually watched a Star Wars show.
Gutsy. I think recently enough the trailer for Joker 2 dropped. I'm not sure if you've seen
that. Yes, actually, I have. And listen, I'm intrigued for several reasons.
Mm.
Mostly because Joker was fine, 5 out of 10, middle of the road. This looks like they're cranking the weird up to 11. What right. I find super interesting about this, though, is that it is the first musical in so many years I've seen that is being advertised as a musical.
Yes. Like, unlike the Mean Girls and Wonka and all them, yeah.
Yeah, like that's it. Like, there was, we've had this discussion where studios seem to be afraid to market musicals, and this is lean
yeah.
all like, the
if you're
way.
Afraid to market them, why make them?
Great question. But this leaned all the way. The whole thing is like, I think most of this trailer is a Singing in the Rain pastiche. Like,
yes, absolutely. But with the 2.5 minutes left, I want to recommend, have you heard of a show called Big Mood?
No, I haven't heard anything about this.
Okay, it's a big new thing on Channel 4, and I'm going to look up the actors' names now. But it's a really weird one. It's a 6-episode, like, sitcom-y thing. And it lures you in on the promise of, like, a 2 20-something dysfunctional things kick about the city and get into mayhem. A bit like another show I really, really love called I Hate You. But then, once you're into it, you discover it's about mental health and like multiple identities and all that kind of stuff. Like, but you get lured in by the sitcom premise, and then it turns out to be a drama. It's one of the strangest pivots I've seen in a long time. It's Lydia West from It's a Sin and Nicola, I hope I'm pronouncing this right because it's an Irish name, Coughlan from Derry.
Oh, hell yeah. No, yeah. I love Nicola Coughlan. She's incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. She's so, like, I want to make sure I get the particular dysfunction right. Bipolar. Sorry, it was bipolar. So basically, she goes off her, like, medication for bipolar because she thinks it'll make her a stronger writer. This is Coughlan now. And Lydia West is like her friend who runs a bar. And it starts out as a zany comedy, but the longer it goes on, the more you realize that this is a drama about concerns around medicine with mental health. And it's the strangest pivot I've ever seen. And it's really compelling. And it breaks my heart that because it's not on streaming, no one will hear of this. But it's really, really good.
Damn. Like, I keep the Channel 4 app installed on my phone for things exactly like this. I'm definitely checking this out. If not, just to like get a Nicola Coughlan fix before Bridgerton comes back in May.
Oh, absolutely. And Lydia West is amazing too. Like, I mean, that's why I was surprised, because it starts out as like a normal sitcom. Like the first episode is the Coughlan is an aspiring playwright, and she's been invited back to her old school to give a speech. But like the whole thing makes fun of like kind of like, oh, she's chatting up the teacher she fancied back in the day. Oh, she's swearing in front of the kids. How random. And then like on a dime, it turns into like, no, she's not well. We have to take care of her. And like, I'm sorry to kind of giving away the sting to recommend it, but like, we're so used to shows where like, you know, this is a comedy, this is a bit of this, bit of that, but like the advertising promised one thing and then you watch it and you're like one episode in and you're like, oh yeah, it's kind of funny. I feel like the two actors are a bit too good for this. Why are they here? Oh.
And then the rug gets pulled.
Right. And it's still zany. It's not like it stops being funny.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't expected to have feelings 4 episodes into a sitcom. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Channel 4 has always been a bit like that, though. I mean, like, that's like, I think they did the original Shameless, and that's kind of that bread and butter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, obviously, Derry Girls came from there as well, like, you know.
No, you've caught me interested. That's how it's great. I'm definitely checking
Yeah, I think 4 episodes are out now, but last 2 episodes are, I think, well, all the episodes are up on the 4 player now, but they're going out on terrestrial TV, 2 at a time. Sure. So, yeah, you can watch that whole thing now.
But I think that brings us up to time.
Just about, yes. So is there anything you would like to say before we wrap it up?
Actually, there is. We've been teasing this announcement for a while. However, it is a bit too late to like to call it an announcement. By the time this show wraps up, we will have appeared at Kaizoku-kun in Cork. We'll have
been loved seeing you there. Thank you.
We loved seeing you there. myself and Dara will be making the journey down there to have a rehabilitation session about Madame Web.
if Dara, of course, is at any time not on this show, especially since he said he would be here, assume it is due to active Madame Web.
Yeah. Oh yes, yeah. But fear not. Because although we may be incredibly late in getting this information out to you, we are planning on recording the show, which will drop on the feeds at a later date. So keep an eye on the feeds. Of course,
the date anyway. Dara may drop this online early.
What is the date? That's a great question, Kian.
You're going to be there.
I'm going to be there. Yeah, I know it's Saturday. I just don't know what date Saturday is.
Today's the 10th.
It's going to be so that we're going to be there on Saturday the 13th at
KaizokuCon.
But of course, that con is running Friday through Sunday down at the University College Cork. Wonderful con, wonderful people. And as always, you can find all of information like that through our socials, and you can find all of our socials through our website, which is nerdtoknowmedia.com. There as well, you will find our Patreon. If you like what we do, we'd appreciate a few bucks. And with that, I believe that is everything. We are done, and we will see you next episode.
Excellent. Dara, I'm sorry that we're like a weird 2 minutes over. Have fun dealing with that. Okay, thank you very much. We hope to see and have seen you at the convention, and we will be back next time, hopefully, with news. Wouldn't that be nice?
The moment we hit stop. The moment we hit stop, I'll get a Google alert.
If Marvel updates at 11 o'clock on Wednesday the 10th of April, you'll know why.
Kian, they do. They always do.
Okay. See you next time, everyone. Bye now.
Bye.
Alright, so you're listening to the podcast, you're like, hey, I'm not in Ireland, how do I get in touch? Well, TuneIn has you covered. That's how you can check us out live when we're on the radio. You go to TuneIn and download the app, or you can check out the live streams on nairtonomedia.com or Phoenix 92.5 FM. If you want to get in contact with us, it's very easy. Nairtonomedia everywhere. Nairtonomedia on Twitter. Nairtonomedia Instagram. Nairtonomedia on Twitch. Nairtonomedia@gmail.com if you want to reach out via email. Hope to hear from you soon. Check out the Wrestling Rewind here on Phoenix 92.5 FM every Tuesday at 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. And of course, over on nairtonomedia.com, the only wrestling podcast by wrestling fans who don't hate wrestling. We'll see you then.
Hey, Dara, what are you doing over there in Ireland? Like, with the freaking leprechauns and everything. That's not cool. You should be over here with the cosplayers. At least then you could, like, I don't know, pretend like you got, I don't know, some kind of thing going on. Yeah, with that, you give me a Brooklyn Blade. Yeah, Dara. Why ain't she over here with Joey? Anyway, we missed you, dude. So, this is Bill Caribo saying,
I love it.
Thank you for listening to a Nerd to Know Media production.